Hello, you're listening to the Nation's Blind Podcast. I'm Melissa Riccobono, and I'm here with
Anil Lewis, and I'm also on the Nation's Blind Podcast.
You are.
Yeah,
right. Happy here with National Melissa. Guide Dog Month.
Wow, look at that. National Guide Dog Month.
You know, now, I didn't even know there was one, so sorry.
Is it, I forget the proper, is it National Guide Dog Month or National Dog Guide Month, or it really doesn't matter now?
I think it's
all right,
listeners, National
that's your first question.
Guide Dog Month.
Let's go with that.
But if I'm wrong, please write to us, tweet us, Facebook us, let us know you're listening.
But for now, it's going to be Guide Dog Month.
That's right. All absolutely. Right, and our producer hasn't whispered in our ear that it is.
It is Guide Dog Month.
Okay. No, I was going to say he hasn't whispered in our ears that it isn't Guide Dog Month. Yeah. So I think we're okay.
Yeah. Okay. Good enough. Good. I was just trying to stir some things up.
There is kind of some controversy around that topic, isn't there?
Speaking of controversy, that's really where we start this whole discussion around Guide Dog Month, isn't it?
We are unsheathing the elephant in the room.
That's the best way to start it.
That's right. You know, we're opening the trunk. See what I did there?
Yeah, I see. That's pretty good.
Unpacking the pachyderm.
Oh, all right. That's enough. All right. So we have a really interesting.
And I'm trying to think of another pun, but I can't.
All right. So email that and tweet that for
us. I'm very punny. But anyway, yes, we are.
Oh, my
God.
We've created a monster. About National Guide Dog Month. We're going to interview anybody today?
We are going to interview someone. We are going to interview Al Elia, who is an attorney with the National Federation of the Blind, who is also a guide dog user. Mm-hmm. And we are going to talk about mostly discrimination with guide dog teams.
Yeah.
Is it getting better? Is it getting worse?
Yeah.
And particularly rideshare. Uber and Lyft have really opened up some opportunities
definitely
for discrimination, unfortunately.
Well, I thought you were going to start with this, open up some opportunities for some real greater independence.
Oh, well, I mean, yes. I mean,
but along with that,
no,
it's come with the problem.
That's absolutely right. Yeah. That's absolutely right. And so is it getting better? Is it getting worse? Al's going to unpack that pachyderm for us, and we will have that interview. I really enjoyed talking with Al. He's a great guy.
Interview.
Yes, he is. So should we get to it before I get too punny?
Oh, my goodness. Let's listen to Al.
You're listening to the Nation's Blind Podcast, and I'm here with Al Elia. How are you, Al?
I'm good, Melissa. How are you?
I'm doing well. So it is National Guide Dog Month in September. So happy National Guide Dog Month, first of all. You, like I, have made the choice to use a guide dog, though. My guide dog is retired right now, so I'm sort of in between dogs because I don't want two big dogs in my little row house in Baltimore. And since one of my daughter's first words was woof when she was just a little bitty thing, I think it'd be very sad to have the dog retire somewhere else. So I'm here in Baltimore with the dog, kind of between dogs. You know, I know my story as far as why I chose to use a dog. What made you choose a guide dog?
Well, initially, I chose to use a dog when I was in college, and I frankly hadn't had much exposure to mobility training. But, you know, I still had enough vision during the day to get around, and I just noticed that at night I was having a great deal of difficulty. Mm-hmm. You know, this is sort of before I found the NFB and got cane training. And so I got a dog to help me get around in the evening and discovered that not only did the dog help me in the evening, but, you know, as a person with RP, where even in the daytime I had no peripheral vision, the dog really helped me to sort of get around more easily during the day as well. Subsequently, when I have sort of been between dogs and used a cane, I've realized that, you know, while I can get around just fine with a cane, that the way that I am perceived in the world is very different. You know, I find that people do not, you know, shout across the street at me or, you know, sort of run up and grab me as much when I'm using a dog as when I'm using a cane, because people don't understand the way that blind people detect things, and that it's okay if you're walking toward a telephone pole because you'll hit it when you'll hit it with your cane when you're 3 or 4 feet away.
Right.
And of course the dog will sort of adjust your trajectory so that you sort of move through the world more like a sighted person, and therefore the sighted people don't get all freaked out.
That is true, unless they're scared of dogs, which is a whole other issue.
Well, yes, that is true.
But, you know, it's interesting. I'm totally blind, and I also chose to use a dog in college. And I'd had mobility training sort of all through high school and elementary school. But I also chose to use a dog because I had a night class my first year of college, and where I always felt fairly safe walking back to my dorm across campus when it was dark, I kind of just started getting just a little bit of feeling of discomfort, especially in the winter months when it was really dark, really early. And I thought, you know, I've always liked dogs, and I've always sort of thought about getting a guide dog. And if I were to have a guide dog, particularly at night, as a woman, I felt like I would feel a little bit safer. And so that's kind of initially what really prompted me, even though I'd kind of said from little on that, yeah, I might want to get a guide dog someday because I love dogs. That was really the thing that kind of pushed me over to really begin to explore schools and decide to get a dog. So kind of that night travel for both of us is interesting.
And Melissa, you know, that was part of my decision as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, in addition to sort of having difficulty getting around, moving slowly and moving clearly like a person who looked like he was not getting around easily, you know, looking like a person who wasn't walking confidently, shall I say.
Right.
You know, I didn't want to be marked as a victim.
Right.
And, you know, having a 100-pound German Shepherd walking next to you is always going to be helpful for one's sense of safety.
Yeah. No, definitely. Absolutely. So I didn't mention you're also a lawyer by profession. And so, you know, let's get into, you know, some legal stuff, but more based on kind of our experiences. So you can kind of answer this question based on your experience, but also, of course, your experiences as a lawyer. How do you think that we're doing in society as far as guide dog teams and discrimination goes? How frequently or infrequently do you think that discrimination for people who are using dogs and their dogs occur these days?
You know, it's the best of times, it's the worst of times.
Oh, the tale of two cities.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, you know, as I say, I started using a guide dog close to 25 years ago. And at the time, it was very infrequent for me to encounter problems where, you know, people would say, you can't come here with the dog, or I'm not going to serve you because you have a dog. Mm-hmm. It would occasionally happen with taxi cabs.
Yes.
And when I would call the dispatch, it would instantly be an apology and we'll send a cab to pick you up and take you wherever you want for free, you know,
that's,
as an apology.
Wow. that's service.
I had situations with stores where, you know, I would go into the store and they would tell me I couldn't come in, and I would say, well, I'm coming in anyway, and if you want to call the police, you know, they'll tell you that I'm right. I did in one instance have to actually call the police on a store that refused to let me in, where I needed to rent a truck, and obviously I had a other person to drive it, but they refused to let me in to, you know, pay for renting the truck.
Wow.
You know, and the police showed up, and the police told the owner that he had to serve me, and, you know, that was 25 to 20 years ago. I've found, though, that lately there seems to be less awareness among the general population of guide dogs. I mean, I know growing up, guide dogs were sort of in the media. You could see movies where there would be a person with a guide dog. You know, famously, and while it wasn't perhaps the best depiction of a independent blind person, there was a guide dog in the opening scene of Superman.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And, you know, lately it seems like there hasn't been. I've encountered so many people who see the dog. You know, see, I have a dog. The dog very clearly has a harness. I even wear sunglasses to signal to people that, you know, I am blind because, you know, I'm often told that I don't look like a blind person, whatever that means. Hmm. And people will see the dog and they will say, you know, well, what's that thing on his back for? and I explain he's a guide dog and say, what's that? Because I'm blind. Oh, and so he helps you? Yes.
Yes,
that's
yes, he does.
And so I think a combination of that and the sort of problems that we are having with people who have either pets or, in some instances, emotional support animals. But I think it's mostly in the situation of pets where they sort of know that person with disabilities who have service animals are allowed places with their dogs. And so I want to bring my dog too, and I'll just go on the internet and print off this ID and, you know, be able to bring my pet. And so as a consequence, there is a great deal more suspicion on the part of people as to whether or not this, you know, this dog is a real service animal, if you will. And so that's caused a lot of problems. I'm sure you're aware of the problems with, you know, airlines trying to restrict access for people with service and emotional support animals. it happens in stores now where, you know, you walk into a store or a coffee shop and, you know, I will be stopped and, you know, asked, is that a service animal, when I think it is pretty obvious. And
yeah,
they'll ask me if I have ID for the service animal, and I have to get into a whole discussion of how they're not allowed to ask for ID.
Right.
So, as I say, on the one hand, it seems like people are more aware that they do have to let service animals in. At the same time, there is more suspicion as to whether or not this animal is really a service animal, when, while certainly other service animals for disabilities other than blindness are important and should be allowed everywhere, you know, sort of we're the originals.
Right.
You know, the guide dog is sort of the original service animal.
Right.
And, you know, you would think that they would be the most obvious and easy to identify service animals, and yet it doesn't seem that they are.
Right. No, and that's so true, and that's really mirrored my experience. Aside from the taxi cabs, I'm glad you actually got a ride for free. I've never gotten anything for free after being denied. I mean, I've gotten, you know, service eventually, which has been good, but when I call the cab company, or when I used to call the cab company, what they often said, particularly here in Baltimore, was, well, we can't do anything about it. We know it's illegal, but they're contract employees. So, you know, we can talk to them, but we can't really force them to take you. And wrong or not, that was just the attitude of the company, which drove me nuts. And anyway, that's a whole other story.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, and it is interesting. It does seem that there are areas of the country where that may be different.
Mm-hmm.
The instances where I was talking about 25 to 20 years ago were all in Cambridge, Massachusetts, or the People's Republic of Cambridge, as it's well justifiably known. When I actually called the police to have them come to the U-Haul that was refusing to rent me a truck, they actually set converging squad cars with the sirens blaring.
Wow.
You know.
Wow.
You know, it was like all points bulletin, blind man being discriminated against.
Hurry, hurry.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
justice to be served.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's great.
Yeah, so, you know, but certainly I have, you know, encountered problems like the ones you're describing,
mm-hmm.
Albeit rarely. And, you know, I think part of it is having to, you know, sort of remain calm, but at the same time, you know, sort of explain
yep.
that, you know, there is a law. There's probably multiple laws, depending on whether your state has its own protective laws.
Right.
That, you know, this is illegal, that they could be subject to fine, and that they need to do something about this.
Yep. Yeah. No, and that's exactly how I have handled it as well. And then also complained to management or, you know, somewhere else if that occurs. Certainly sometimes you can't really prove it. You know, the cab driver rides by you and just mysteriously doesn't pick you up. And,
sure.
you know, that also now is sort of what's happened some on rideshare services like Uber and Lyft. And obviously those who listen to the Nation's Blind podcast regularly know that the National Federation of the Blind has some settlement agreements with Uber and Lyft. And we really want to make sure that we can catalog users' experiences so that we can figure out whether the situation with rideshare discrimination is improving or not improving. So are you one of the counsels for the NFB that works on the settlement?
I am.
So can you talk just a little bit, you know, in your opinion, what's improving, what's not? And more importantly, I guess, what should people do whenever they ride in a vehicle, rideshare vehicle, Uber or Lyft, with a guide dog or with someone who has a guide dog?
As far as whether or not things are improving or not, I think that that is very subjective.
Yeah.
Because certainly, I would love to be able to say that having reached agreements with ride-sharing companies that now the problem is solved and, you know, blind persons and other persons with disabilities who use service animals do not have any, you know, discrimination or denials by rideshare drivers. That is sadly not the case.
Mm-hmm.
The denials still happen, you know, non-denial discrimination still happens. But, you know, I think it is important that riders who use service animals understand that the driver has to know that this dog is, or usually dog, that the animal is a service animal. Mm-hmm. I myself encountered a situation once where English was clearly the driver's second language.
Right.
He, you know, was insistent that he couldn't take a dog. Mm-hmm. And I said, it's a guide dog. Mm-hmm. And he said, no. I said, it's a guide dog. I am blind. It's a guide dog. And
right.
then I finally said, you know, you're not allowed to deny me based on my use of a service animal. He said, oh, a service animal? and I said,
yes.
He said, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know. I said, that's what a guide dog is. He said, I didn't know.
Okay.
So, you know, in some instances, it's sort of, you know, literally right. the magic incantation of service animal.
Animal,
because
got
that
it.
Is what, you know, that is what drivers and frankly others are being told when mm-hmm. they are educated. And as I said, because guide dogs are not depicted in popular media, mm-hmm. you know, you would think that it would be obvious, but it's not necessarily obvious, especially to a person who maybe is not expecting a dog to be there and shows up and there's a dog. Now, some people I know have their own means of figuring out where the driver is and, you know, which car is their rideshare driver, etc. In my case, for whatever reason, I've chosen to call the drivers mm-hmm. to let them know, not just that I have a service animal, but that I am blind, that right. I am not going to see them.
Right.
And that I need them to, you know, roll down the window, honk the horn, yep. do something to, you know, let me know that they've arrived because I am blind.
Right.
And then I say, don't worry, you'll know who I am mm-hmm. because I'm the big guy in the like black coat with sunglasses and a big black service animal. Mm-hmm. And they say, okay, not going to miss that. Now, I have had situations where, you know, drivers have said, you know, I can't take a dog. And, mm-hmm. and so on the phone, while they're still 10 minutes out, I can have the conversation and explain, you know, we're talking about a service animal.
Yep.
I am blind. I need the service animal and use him to get around. The law requires you to take him. The service animal policy of the rideshare company requires you to take him. Mm-hmm. And you know, you need to come pick me up. And I have had one instance where the driver said, look, I just can't do it. And I said, okay, understand that I'm going to report you.
Yep.
And that's going to, you know, that you're likely no longer going to be able to drive for the rideshare company.
Right.
And the driver said, okay, but, you know, I just can't take a dog.
Yep. I said, okay. I had the exact same maybe it was the same driver. I had the exact same experience.
Yes,
same driver because I did report that driver and he was terminated as a result of that. That's the really important part. Just like you said, the driver has to know. You have to have that conversation. If they cancel or drive away before you can have that conversation, you should certainly report them. But particularly if you have had that conversation and you make it very clear that it is a service animal and it's the law that they take the service animal and the policy of the company and they still refuse you, that's a much stronger report to be able to file.
Indeed. And you know, as I say, I tend to call the drivers. I guess I'm a little old-fashioned. I prefer phone calls to messaging mm-hmm. and whatnot. Sending a message, a text message with the same sort of content, by the way, I am blind, or if you don't want to, I am a person with a disability and I have a service animal, just to let you know. I do think it is helpful to, especially, and this may not work for people who are not blind, but, you know, as a blind person who probably is going to need the driver to, you know, identify themselves,
right.
It is helpful to let them know that ahead of time so that they associate, oh, okay, yes, this person has a disability, and just sort of, oh, and this person also has a service animal, and that's how I can help identify them.
Right.
You know, rather than, I think what sometimes happens is, you know, the driver shows up and there's a person with a guide dog or a service animal, and sort of the driver wasn't prepared. And that is not an excuse.
Right.
Because the driver should still take the service animal.
Yes.
But you know, you sort of haven't laid the groundwork to prepare the driver. And you also run into the difficulty then that the driver may, you know, because they are upset at the, you know, sort of in the moment of being in, you know, an argument with a person, that they may not be hearing the fact that this is a service animal, that you're a person with a disability, et cetera. And so the rideshare companies under the agreements, you know, when it's a he said, she said, or, you know, whatever, where there's only two people and there's not a sort of third party witness and there's no record of a you know, text conversation mm-hmm. or a phone, you know, where you can say I called and I was on the phone and I explained that it was a service animal. Then the rideshare companies are often believing the drivers when the drivers say, oh, I was not aware that it was a service animal. Mm-hmm.
Although they know, only get a couple chances to say that, though. Is that correct?
Well, that is true. They only get one strike.
Right.
So they get one instance of, oh, I didn't know.
Right.
Or at least that they're supposed to get
only one. Correct.
And this is why it's important for riders who encounter barriers, whether it's a denial or, you know, being treated differently on the ride or what have you, to not just report it to the rideshare companies, but also report it to the NFB's rideshare testing program, which is available on the NFB's website, because that allows us, the attorneys, to sort of make sure that we are following up with the rideshare companies on, you know, denials that we know happen,
right,
to find out, you know, what happened to the driver. You know, are the companies living up to the requirements of the agreement?
Right. And that's a really good point, you know, that discrimination isn't just when you get denied. It's also when you are treated differently by the driver. And the rideshare survey is very simple. It's just a few questions, particularly if you weren't denied, which we're going to talk about in a second, because it's really important that we have positive experiences as well. We need all experiences. But even if you were denied, it's a very short survey, a few questions, and then the attorneys will follow up with you. But you should also definitely report it to the company as well. Do both of those things. And you can mm-hmm. get the rideshare survey on the NFB's website. You can also get it in the NFB Connect app, I believe, still has a place where you can get access to the survey. So bookmark it. Try to use it every time you ride, because it's important that we get experiences where people had good experiences, correct?
Sure. You know, in addition to knowing where rideshare drivers behaved poorly, it's good to know situations where those, you know, drivers did the right thing. You know, I had an instance yesterday where I ordered a rideshare and I called to say, you know, I'm blind, so I'm going to need you to identify, blah, blah, blah. And you can see me because I have a big black service dog. And the driver said, oh, yay.
I love that. Yeah, that makes my day.
it was certainly notable. So, you know, those sorts of experiences are also important because we need to know whether or not things are getting better.
Right.
So we know that the rideshare companies are growing. We know that they're taking more rides. We don't know whether or not the number of denials is and other sort of, you know, non-denial discrimination.
Right.
You know, for example, telling you that you're, you know, it's an SUV, your dog has to ride in the
back.
It's not allowed to ride in the seat with you. Something like that. Or getting in the car and having the driver, like, you know, talk about how upset they are that they're going to have to, like, you know, back
clean their
car.
Yep, exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Those sorts of things. At any rate, we know that denials continue to happen. We don't know whether or not more people are having better experiences now that the rideshare company agreements are in place without having people tell us that, you know, through the NFB's rideshare testing site, that, you know, I had a good experience, so that we know that, like, if there are, say, 100 reports in, you know, June of 2019, and I'm making these numbers and dates up, but let's say there were 100 reports in June and there were 100 reports in May. If we know that there are 20 reports in May of denials, and then there are 15 reports in June, you know, if the total number of reports is 100, well, then that looks like that has gone down. On the other hand, if it's, you know, 15 in May and 20 in June, but the number of reports in May is 100 and the number of reports in June is 200,
right?
Then we know that, like, oh, well, actually, you know, as a percentage,
it's about
the looks
same.
Like things are getting a little bit better,
right?
You know, within statistical margins of error and blah, 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 blah. But it's important to have, you know, a total number to compare to the number of denials.
Sure.
So that we can understand what it's like out there in the real world, you know, beyond just the people who are encountering, you know, barriers.
Right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. This has been a great conversation. And please, everybody out there, make sure that you are filling out your rideshare survey, and happy travels with your guide dog.
Thank you, Melissa. It was a pleasure talking to you.
You're listening to the Nation's Blind Podcast.
Yeah, it's a really good interview, and I think it's very important that we as an organization, the National Federation of the Blind, really speak to and have actions that really direct our energy and effort toward correcting the discrimination that guide dog users face. And I'm glad that Al's on our team, and I think that some of the strategies that we're employing are going to really create the opportunity for blind people to take advantage of this new disruptive technology and ride sharing, but also just prohibiting the discrimination for those individuals that choose to use guide dog as a mobility tool in any environment.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think the education, the more we can educate, the better. And also, I think that two things that are really important, it's not just the refusal of a ride that's discrimination. If you get in a car and the driver is grumbling the whole time about, oh, I'm not going to have to vacuum and I'm going to have to clean my whole car. And, you know, I, as a guide dog user, I don't ever have a problem if a driver asks me, can you hold on a minute? I have a sheet in my trunk. Would you mind if your dog lays on the sheet? I mean, fine. That's perfectly acceptable to me. Mm-hmm. I don't consider that discrimination at all.
Because a guide dog user has a responsibility, and that's nice.
That's right. Yeah. And you know, as a blind person, I guess I could also take the responsibility and bring my own sheet, but usually I have 5 million other things to carry. So I don't mind that at all.
Only thing with that, if I chose to use a guide dog, I would probably try to find a way to take my own, because I'd be afraid of, okay, they're going in their trunk to get a sheet to put on my animal. How do I know that the sheet that they're using I want on my animal?
Well, it's more on the floor for the animal to lay on. It's not really covering the animal.
I understand, but it's still contact with something.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, but if your animal has flea prevention and that type of thing, that, you know, they're going to...
Good to know.
You know, anyway, that's a whole other thing.
Well, we're going to be doing some learning around this.
So. Yeah, no. But at the same time, if they're complaining constantly and they make you feel uncomfortable on the ride, that is also discrimination, and you should report that. But also making sure that you report those either truly, really positive experiences,
yes, exactly,
or those experiences that were just fine. They were neutral, you know, nothing at all said, nothing at all negative or positive. And those are really important as well, because we really do need those as the benchmark too. Okay,
agreed.
This is how many reports, this is how many rides we know about, and, you know, here are the percentages.
And a lot of people miss that particular aspect of advocacy. They think that every time advocacy is about, you know, beating up someone who's doing something wrong. But if you don't praise those that are doing it right, you don't develop those exemplars that really kind of set a standard for others to follow. So that's a very good point to make.
Yeah, definitely.
So we're going to learn more about guide dogs as we do subsequent podcasts around guide dogs.
We are, and we would love to hear from you. Are you a guide dog user? Do you have questions about using a guide dog? Have you had any great experiences? Al and I talked about our reasons that we made the choice to use a guide dog, and hopefully on the next episode I can talk a little bit more about the things I love and the things that maybe are a little frustrating once in a while about using a guide dog. But what about your experiences?
I would love to hear some really either funny or interesting stories of people who've gone out and used their guide dogs in a variety of different environments. You know, that's the best thing. Leaving voicemails so we can hear them in your own words would be awesome.
We would love that. And if you want to leave a voicemail, 410-659-9314, extension 2444.
Mm-hmm. And if you guys are more technically savvy and you want to record your audio on your iPhone and then email it to us, you can email it to us at podcast@nfb.org.
You could probably
see what I did there? See?
I do. Yeah. And you know what? You could probably also send it to us audio on Facebook, or even a little video, I guess, although, you know, video on a podcast isn't exactly what we need, but there'd be audio with the video. Just search for National Federation of the Blind on Facebook. Or I'll be nice to you, Anil, because I know you always have a trouble with our Twitter handle.
Yes.
You can tweet us with audio also, or just experiences. We are at @NFB_voice.
There you go. We're looking forward to hearing from you. Giving us feedback on the podcast is always welcome, but we're definitely looking forward to hearing some interesting guide dog stories as we talk about guide dogs during National Guide Dog Month.
Great. And remember, you can live the life you want.
Blindness is not what holds you back.